Can you save Mario's girl from the clutches of Donkey Kong? Nostalgia, the only podcast exploring every NES game in chronological order. I'm Michael Esposito.
I'm Sean Tresmond.
And that's it today. It's a very intimate conversation between me and the Sean.
That's me. Yeah, that's me.
I really feel bad, though, because your voice is pretty good.
No. You got a great voice.
You know,
Mike.
So it's nice to have like a very deep guy and like, you know, hey, it's me. Guys waiting for a podcast.
So we're talking Donkey Kong today.
Talking Donkey Kong, but most importantly too, welcome to 1986.
Oh yeah, it feels so different now.
Yeah, things are different, especially in Japan. By this time in 1986, The Legend of Zelda is out in Japan, and Super Mario Brothers 2 is being released this same month as Donkey Kong is for NES. Even weirder, Donkey Kong was the launch title for the Famicom.
Japanese version, yeah.
So that was like that, Donkey Kong Jr., and Popeye. Okay, that sounds really random. If you don't know, Miyamoto loved Popeye, and actually Donkey Kong was gonna be Popeye first.
Wow.
That was like a thing. Like, if you actually think about it, right, if Mario was Popeye, olive oil was Pauline, and Bluto would have been the guy
with the guns.
The big Donkey Kong. He would have been Donkey Kong. So it makes sense. But they didn't get the rights in time to make that. So they were like, oh, I'll just make something funny instead. So he made Donkey Kong. And this is a funny story because Donkey Kong actually doesn't like translate well the way that Miyamoto thought it did. When they sent it over to like Nintendo of America for testing, they were like, okay, but why Donkey Kong? And he was like, well, you know, donkey means like stupid. So it's like he's a stupid ape.
Oh,
like,
is that what that means?
Yeah. And they were like, well, no, donkey doesn't mean that here. Like that donkey's an animal. Like, you know, it's
wow.
Like they were associating it with, you know, Jack, blah. But we can say jackass.
You can say jackass.
We gave people enough warning too.
Yeah.
And the mom had time to turn off the podcast when I said Jack blah. So that's Donkey Kong in a nutshell. Also weird for 1986 is this is when the now you're playing with power.
Oh,
you know, like
okay.
That's when this catchline kind of like kicks off.
Catchphrase, tagline
all together at the same time. It really kicks off here because now they're doing commercials because it's no longer just restricted to New York and L.A. It is now all throughout the country. You can finally get your Nintendos.
So to most people, this would almost seem like it was also a launch title.
Yeah, I think so. Like, in a weird way, though, too.
Yeah.
Like, I think by this point, enough buzz has been generated by the New York and LA launches that, like, Electronic Games, which was one of the big magazines at the time, it's not the same as Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Yeah.
But Electronic Games, which was one of the big ones at the time, did, like, this whole cover story on, like, Nintendo NESs are finally coming, like, around the States. And they were like, you know, you've been bugging us about it long enough. Like, so clearly, like, kids around were definitely interested in NES already just by what they were seeing. And I think part of the draw is games like Donkey Kong, which were huge hits in the arcade. But then also, like, seeing Super Mario Brothers and hearing about it and all that buzz was probably, like, another reason to want to own the console.
Totally.
So can we do first impressions? Like, I don't know how new you are to Donkey Kong.
Well, I mean, like, well, I guess first we should sort of describe Donkey Kong to whoever
hasn't. It might help to do that.
Yeah.
Would you like to give that a stab?
I guess I could give that a shot. So in Donkey Kong, you play Mario as he tries and saves Pauline, from the titular Donkey Kong, who has run into a construction site.
Yeah, Mario is like essentially in this game a carpenter. He's not a plumber.
He's a carpenter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like,
is there any wood?
No, but they described him as a carpenter in this game.
Oh.
Then he's also like doing the, you know, like in Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
He's doing all that stuff too.
Yeah. So an all around construction worker guy.
Yeah. I think plumber only came into the equation when Mario Brothers.
Yeah. With the pipes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you have to go up this incomplete tower, to save Pauline from The Giant Ape, and you have in this version only three levels, which are all different.
Very strange.
Yeah.
Yes.
it shows a quick story.
I think this is actually, I don't know if this is bold to say, but this might be like one of the first examples of a game with a story.
Really?
I mean, Pac-Man kind of has like that. They meet and everything and like those little cutscenes. Yeah, but this is very complete.
I think prior to this, probably you could say that every game had justifications.
Yeah, yeah, like I guess I understand the plot of Asteroids.
Yeah.
You know, like you're this space shuttle trying to shoot off asteroids before they hit Earth.
But I mean, like Kung Fu, well you're right. Kung Fu is not as...
Donkey Kong is a game. But no, that's a good point to bring up is that like if you're doing this chronologically, it is weird because it's like this game seems really primitive.
Yeah.
The only thing you can do in this game is jump.
Yeah.
And jumps from certain heights will kill you.
Yeah, that was kind of annoying. But so this actually was my first impression if we're just going to jump into first impressions.
Yeah, I think first impressions is cool.
I mean, I had thrown some quarters into the arcade cabinet before and immediately... pretty much got run over by barrels. For some reason, I had very bad reflexes when I played this game in the past. This is the first time I've ever actually played through it.
On the NES hardware. Because I just, you know, I think it's worth throwing out there at this point. They are different. I would actually argue, too, that there would be a disadvantage to being an NES player, thinking you're good at Donkey Kong, and then playing the arcade version.
Yeah.
So you're saying you had the arcade version experience first.
I had the arcade version experience first, but I never got past the first stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that would make some sense.
Yeah. So everything after that was completely new to me. I've seen the documentary
right.
King of Kong. I know a lot about...
We'll have to talk about that later.
Yeah. I know that there's a lot of lore behind that. So I've seen the other stages played out, but I had to learn it as I played, which I think a lot of people, when this game came out, were just like, oh, here are the levels that I know. And I thought it was fun. I thought that the jumping is not Super Mario Brothers,
right.
But it's definitely also not Ice Climber.
Yeah, and I think that's how we judge our jumping in games right now is like
a scale from Ice Climber to Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah,
where are you?
Exactly. Because it's like Kung Fu, you jump, but it's not necessary.
You don't need to jump.
You jump to dodge low knives and that's about it.
And the snakes.
But if I could just jump in for a minute, some things that I just wanted to touch off on my first impression is I can't really give a first impression here because I did play Donkey Kong a lot in the arcade and playing this NES version, this is, I guess, my NES first impression, is it's a bit of a revelation because it's a little easier. The jump feels better. The jump, by all means, is definitely, like, over the barrels. I very rarely, like, clipped into one at just the edge and felt like I got screwed by that. The other thing is, I think even the jump of, like, we were talking about how, like, a jump from a far height will kill you. I think that, like, they were a little more lenient on that here, too. Because in the arcade version, certain times I would jump just the smallest of gaps between two things and they would register that as a kill. So I felt that was kind of cheap.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely missing the inclusion of that third level. Because it goes in the arcade game, it's like how high can you climb? Mm-hmm. And it's measured in Donkey Kongs, which are really strange. It's measured like 25 meters.
I didn't
50
know he was 25 meters tall.
Yeah. So he's 25 meters tall. And so we're missing the 75 meter stage. It goes right to the 100 meter stage. But we'll talk about that when we go through the stages. One thing I just wanted to mention is Miyamoto, not exactly directly related to the port here of the NES version. So I don't know if he was actually a fan of this. Most of these, he was more concerned with like baseball and because that was another one of like the Famicom early games. He was more concerned about making those games and getting them right for the system launch that Donkey Kong by that point in his career. That was like, oh, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of done with that. They had a separate team that was porting those games.
Well, it's kind of like, why would you work on the remaster? Or along those lines.
Exactly. And so I don't know how he would feel about the game being a little easier. I don't think he ever intended to make it challenging.
So do you think that the game is easier because of improvements to the system?
Improvements, yes. So, I think these are improvements.
Okay.
I do feel
you don't think that you don't think that's like a dumbing down of the game, though?
Yeah, I think that the... I don't think it's a dumbing down.
I mean, obviously, if you remove a level, it kind of is that. But in terms of mechanics...
I think Donkey Kong, the arcade game, has that... We need quarters feel to it, you know, where similar to like if you've ever gone to the arcade recently and you play Pac-Man and it starts on speed 3000 and you're like, I don't remember this. Like Pac-Man's going so fast and the ghosts are only blue for half a second. It's like because they're eating your quarters.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It doesn't have to be that way, but that's the way it is. Another fun thing that we didn't talk about that I just want to get out of the way before we go deeper into the game. Mario at this point is established and well-known, but when this game came out in 1981, he was Jumpman. They only named him Mario when it went overseas to America because the landlord of the Nintendo of America building, his name was Mario and he looked like Mario. So they were like, aha, yeah, okay. Mario, there you go.
See, I didn't know that little bit of tidbit stories.
Yeah, it's, well, I'll have a little more tidbits later, but we should probably get into the game and start with 25 millimeter.
25 meter.
We should probably leave that in so everybody can know how silly I was for saying that. I was imagining, too, I even saw it on the screen, like 25mm. You know, like, I don't know, Donkey Kong got really small. They removed all that stuff, though, from the NES game, too, which is weird, because there's not even the awesome setup of him climbing up the ladders to the top of the building.
There's none of that. All they do is they play that very ominous theme over the title screen.
And I do like that, but also weird enough, they play the, at the time, of course it wasn't, but they play the now Donkey Kong Country theme song as well. The do-do-do-do.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, exactly.
Obviously, like at the time, they weren't thinking of that.
No.
But there it is.
There it is.
The Donkey Kong Country theme song starts there, not in Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, it's you know, just a little sidebar. It's very strange to see these games. Well, right now it's only Donkey Kong, but like as somebody that grew up on Donkey Kong Country, to see the origins of this character and how unestablished he was in like any of his traits.
And I would just like to offer the reverse opinion of a guy who didn't grow up with Donkey Kong Country. The CGI graphics did not...
They
didn't do it for me. So I ignored those games, and I only knew of Donkey Kong for the longest time as this version.
Wow.
You know, like, this is how I thought of Donkey Kong, and it's something I do want to talk about after we play all the Donkey Kong games, 1, Junior, 3, and... Mm-hmm. We have to talk about math. We will talk about Donkey Kong Jr. math. But I want to talk about is like Donkey Kong almost fades into obscurity until the Donkey Kong Country games. Like they're what revive him, essentially. But Donkey Kong at this point is Nintendo's first character because Mario's just Jumpman.
Yeah.
They didn't have big plans for him. We talked about in the Super Mario Brothers episode that game wasn't even supposed to have Mario until they were just like, oh, the sales of Mario Brothers is doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it's really funny how things work out for Nintendo early on for things that they didn't intend.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's talk about 25 meter, the very first course. It's very simple, and I like that. You know, the zigzag approach to the stage. Anybody who's played video games knows this level.
Yeah.
I can't imagine not having seen it. You know what we're talking about. There's a little barrel that's soon going to be lit on fire. And why do you think that barrel is on fire?
I don't know. You know, it's weird because I never really noticed that barrel until I was playing. Because it just seemed like, oh, that's the start point.
Yeah, and is it to enforce that you have no escape? Like,
yeah.
You must go up?
Yeah, exactly. Like you're going to go up.
Like, in some way, if you can figure out a way to get over the barrel before it gets set on fire by the blue barrel that gets mm-hmm. thrown down, if you can figure it out, maybe that's an alternate ending where Mario just leaves and he's like, peace out,
yeah,
you can
like,
have Pauline.
I can do better than Pauline.
But, you know, that's the 25 meter level essentially is just like a good way to figure out the jumping controls.
It's a pretty straightforward design. I mean, it can get difficult.
Especially after you've beaten the game a couple times, the difficulty keeps going up, and eventually
you start throwing in different arcs.
There's that zigzag, which is only in the front half of the level, though, so it's not too cheap. Mm-hmm. It would be really cheap if that barrel just zigzagged across the entire screen.
Exactly.
But the barrels, you know, for the most part, they're pretty fair. I did find, though, sometimes that you have to have a really good jump when there's two barrels directly next to each other.
Yeah, because it could be doubling the thing you have to clear.
Right, and so if you're not kind of like in a perfect jump running scenario, you're not really going to be able to clear that one. And so that's my only gripe with the 25-meter level, because other than that, I think it's great, and I think that the hammers are well-placed for where they are.
The power-up to actually allow you to be offensive.
Mario's first power-up.
Yeah.
And according to my sources, so I can't say this with 100% validation, but this was the first platform game to require jumping.
To require jumping?
Yeah, like there were other games that you could say had platforms in them, but they not platforms in the, in the sense that we think of them today, where like now that's how platformers are, is like the whole idea of platformers.
Yeah,
is,
exactly. Can it be? So this must be like the proto platformer that you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we were kind of talking about, is Super Mario Brothers the first platformer? And I would say that no, this is the first game that like requires you to jump over obstacles.
Okay.
And, you know, this is, it's a big deal for game design, and just kind of shows you that like, even though you think you could do this today, think about Miyamoto like coming up with this idea in 1980, because that's when they were making the game. And this had never been done before. And just the idea of like obstacles that you have to jump over. And I know that he wanted to do even more complicated things, like change sizes and stuff like, things that wouldn't be incorporated until all the way into Super Mario Brothers.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I guess when we talk about when we talk about these ports of arcade games, there has been a lot of in the early days of this system. We have to think about it not even in terms of just 1985 or 1986 like design philosophies, but also like when they originally came out in 1980, like just the idea of having the directional movement and also an action of some sort, I guess that was new back
but
then.
But we do also have to think about, like, now this game is releasing in 1986, and does it still hold up in 1986 and now in 2018? Just because, one, that's the point of this podcast, but also, like, you know, are you getting the best bang for your buck if you buy this game in 1986 when you could be playing, you know, Excitebike, Duck Hunt, and Super Mario Brothers? You know, it's like, I think, I don't know, but for me, I think owning my favorite arcade game home would be pretty novel. So let's move into 50 meter.
Yeah, this is a little different because I didn't know how to approach this level at first.
And it's completely different than the, like, easily thought out 25 meter level, where it's just like go left, right to left, you know.
And you have some choices here.
You have to think about, like, am I going to go up the ladder? Am I just going to jump over to the platform where the fire currently is? What's going on with these, like, elevators?
I remember the first, like, when I first came across the level, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to try and, like, circumvent all of this, and I go up the elevator, and then one of those infamous jumping a centimeter too low ends up in his death. So I'm like, okay, maybe I should try the low road. And then I just kept getting whacked by the springs.
Oh yeah, the springs. Yeah, that's what I would call them too.
Yeah. What else would they be called?
I guess they'd have to be the springs. But you found them challenging before you even got near Donkey Kong?
I just remember them. Wait, no.
Because, you know, they do the diagonal back and forth on the platform, and then they just drop straight down. Oh, okay. In between the two platforms that you have to climb up.
Maybe I need a visual. Hold on.
Yeah, we can pull up a visual.
All right. So I guess looking at the level right now, I know now that the obstacle that was getting in my way were the little flames. But yeah, I think just the addition of different obstacles and mechanics sort of threw me through a loop, because I am just, when I think of Donkey Kong, and everything that I've thought about as Donkey Kong has just been that one stage.
Yes.
So
and that's funny, because this is your first time experiencing that stage.
Yeah.
Not the same for me. The 50 meter stage is also something I'm familiar with. And there's a very I just do the same thing every single time. I know I should challenge myself to try it a different way, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Okay.
So what I do is I climb all the way up to the top at the very beginning of the stage. The fire comes up with me. I wait for the fire to go back down the stairs because he's stupid. Mm-hmm. And even though he sees me directly across, he's like, I'll just go back down. I jump across. I see the next elevator coming down. I jump on that one. I jump to the next elevator. I jump over to the platforms. And then I skip that whole, like, what is it, a telephone or a purse or something over there? Yeah, I'm like, okay, I don't need Pauline's purse. I just put it together now, by the way, like saying it in out loud. I never realized you're collecting Pauline's stuff.
Yeah, well, she dropped it.
Yeah, like her umbrella, though, too, and stuff like that. Like, I never realized. I just thought, like, that's a really weird collectibles.
Look, in 1986, chivalry was not dead.
And I was killing it.
You were killing it, Mike.
I was responsible. But anyway, so then, yeah, then you just go up. And if you stand directly above where the ladder you climb up is,
you can't get hit by those.
You can't get hit by those things. They perfectly go over you. So then you spend a little time and you watch it out. And you're like, okay, now where's another safe spot like this? And it's just a little bit after the ladder to go up the stage. So don't get greedy and run right for that last ladder to climb up. Instead, go forward above the ladder, let it bounce over you once, and then immediately climb up that thing.
See, that was not something that I was thinking about. I just kept trying to bolt for it.
It's something that I learned through years of experience.
I ended up, like, once I started to get a rhythm for it and I started to repeat the levels and get to harder iterations of them, I did fall into basically what you just described of going up that platform, waiting for the fire to leave, going up the other platform. But I would just do my best to chance just booking it for that ladder.
Right.
And it worked most of the time, but yeah, no, there were, I kept getting clipped by that stupid spring.
Yeah. And so I think that level is pretty interesting. I think it does offer like something way different than the 25 meter did. I'd like to talk about 75 meter just for a second, even though it's not in the game. Just something that we should remorse over is that the fact that, it's not in the game, because that's really sad, like that they couldn't include four levels. Like, it was like, no, we're eating up all the ROM space on this cart. But also, like, it's a cool thing in that level. Like, it's not the best level in the game. For me, that's actually the 50-meter level. Mm-hmm. I do think that's the best level in the game. What's cool about the 75 meter level is that it has the spinning platforms that like move you, so you kind of have to go like against the grain and stuff like that. I just thought that was interesting. I don't know if they weren't able to like emulate that at the time of the Famicom, was just a lazy port to the NES.
I don't think it was actually a problem of could they do it. I think it was a memory issue. And it had nothing to do with like, oh, can we make this the exact same way? It was just somehow these levels took up too much space.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I watched footage of it because obviously I haven't played it. I like that it adds a little level of flavor because like they actually have like concrete moving, and that like oil canister, like it really shows that this is a construction site and it's not just a just blank platforming space.
And it's nice when you take those little thoughts into the game because you know
that was kind of rare back then.
Rare back then. Pac-Man doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It takes place in some weird world that they managed to then extrapolate into cartoons and Christmas specials and all this other stuff. And a whole world. Baby Pac-Man, Pac-Man Jr., Miss Pac-Man.
So Baby Pac-Man I don't know too much about. And Baby I kind of want to keep it that way.
I just want to really talk about that very fast, all right, since I have to now. Baby Pac-Man is terrible. Pac-Man Jr., on the other hand, really cool because it was half arcade, half pinball machine. So if Pac-Man was like, you know, he's on the maze and he's going through and everything like that through the maze, if he exits out through the bottom, then a pinball Pac-Man comes out and you play like a little pinball game.
A physical pinball.
See, now that's the only thing I don't know because I've never been able to play one in the wild. Remember, like, where do we live? You can't really like find these things. I need to go to like that place in Ohio that has all those arcade games.
Wow.
It's an amusement park.
So we don't even know if this is an actual pinball machine.
I'm willing to look it up right now.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
Let's wait.
All And that took no time at all. We clearly took a break for a second. It's Baby Pac-Man, not Pac-Man Jr. It's a physical pinball machine. And to make matters worse, this whole time we talked about the levels out of order, which really just goes to show how much we played the NES version of this game and not the arcade version. So just to be clear, we were talking about 50 meter as the spring level. That is 75 meter. Yes. And Cement Factory, as I think it's known, is the 50 meter, not the 75 meter.
That's okay.
Who cares?
Yeah, it's not actually canon. It's not on NES.
Yeah, if we wanted to be smart, we would just talk about level 1, level 2, level 3. Yeah. Because that's all they included. But we're not smart, and we allow mistakes on this podcast because you accept us as your imperfect hosts.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being our special guest listener.
So, I think since we didn't play too much of that level or meterage, we can move on.
Let's move on to the final level.
Yeah. Which is, I think it's filled with drama.
It's an exciting level.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but this level is deceivingly hard.
Yeah, no, I think, at first I didn't know what I was supposed to do.
Those yellow things didn't give a hint at all?
I mean, once I realized that they were disappearing when I jumped over them, I'm like, oh, okay. But it took, it took embarrassingly long for me to realize that I had an objective here.
Right.
Aside from just getting up to the top platform. But after that, yeah, the patterns that the flames are, there's an actual word for them, right?
I'm sure there's an actual word for them. I didn't look it up in the manual. We don't have Sam the Manual Smith Sam with here. Us, but I'm sure there's a name for them.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying. The pattern for them is random. Yeah. To me, at least, you know, like I'm sure there is a pattern, but they kind of just corner you really fast. And depending on the way that you go about clearing the sections, you might
get
screw
stuck.
Yourself. Yeah. You might have a really tough time getting the last, like the final one or the final two even, because you found yourself in a space with three fires and no hammers.
Yeah. But I think that while the payoff isn't as cool as in the arcade version, because I feel like you have to make that comparison.
Yeah.
It's still satisfying when you get the last one and he falls down immediately through space and time to a prone position. So I don't know if you have any other thoughts on the level.
Yeah, just two stray thoughts here. One, have you ever tried to like confront Donkey Kong?
I did go to the top and I don't remember what happened.
You just do in the NES version, you just die. You just touch him and you go, vo, 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 vo. You know, that's it. But in the now, I don't remember if it's the arcade version or the Donkey Kong Game Boy game,
ooh,
which we'll be talking about later, too, because
well, that's
a must
lot
talk
of new stuff.
Yeah, that's a must talk about game. In one of those, if you get close to him, he will pick you up and throw you.
Oh,
to your death. You will die as well. Like it's
sounds
like a Game Boy thing. I would love to have seen that in the arcade version,
yeah,
but I never dared tried it while my quarter was on the line. But I think also one really weird thing, but again, it's 1981. What are you going to do? Is that no matter where you clear it, you just magically
end up
spawn
on top.
In the top with Pauline,
yeah,
and Donkey Kong just falls on his face. But I do think it's wonderful. It's obviously King Kong inspired,
yeah, exactly,
with that whole thing. And that might as well be the Empire State Building that you're undoing.
Yes.
You're like undoing
you
the
are,
Empire State
oh,
Building.
Wow, this is really bad.
Mario's like a terrorist?
No. Okay, so if it's any building, it's just a building inspired by the Empire State Building that isn't even finished yet.
Right.
And nobody's working on it.
And as Mario lore has established for us, that's actually New Donk City.
Oh, they're retro-conning this.
Yeah, they're not in Brooklyn. They're not in New York City. This is New Donk City.
Wow.
Because in Super Mario Odyssey, you see all those levels and stuff.
That's true. That's true.
I you know, teach their own. I liked it when it was New York City.
I did too.
Okay. So that's the game in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. And then you just continue to do the same thing over and over. Like,
yeah. And it gets a little harder.
It gets harder, but you're basically Groundhog Day-ing the entire, like, you are just reliving this this traumatic experience of having this woman kidnapped and having to save her over and over.
Yeah. Oh, I never thought of it like a Groundhog's Day. It's like every arcade is kind of like that. Like every arcade game is just Groundhog's
but,
Day.
Like, yeah, but like I think it's different because it does show a story developing.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas other arcade games were just like, okay, wave one, wave two, wave three.
Right.
This one, it's just like, oh, now we're reunited and there's a heart implying that, like, she's my girlfriend, and mm-hmm. then she's being taken again immediately on the same quarter.
Yeah, so, Sean, how much do you think it would cost to make a game like this?
How much would it cost?
What was the budget for Donkey Kong, if you had to guess?
They made it in four months. Okay, this was a team of, like, 15 people.
If we're lucky.
Yeah, 15 people over 4 months. I'm going to say like $1 million.
$100,000.
$100,000.
And it made like $1 billion.
You're not exaggerating.
Like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, worldwide,
up
all
until
time.
Now.
Yeah, yeah, like worldwide all time, $1 billion. You know, like in quarters. Like,
oh, you're just talking about the arcade cabinet?
Yeah, like the arcade cabinet. Like,
jeez.
The arcade cabinet. No one realizes how much money arcade games were making. Like,
wow.
Because you wouldn't just play once.
No.
You know, there's a reason why Pong, like, set off a video game, like, what's the word?
Frenzy?
Frenzy? Yeah.
Frenzy?
I don't know where I was going with
Are
that.
Are you okay,
but,
Mike?
Well, you know, I'm having a stroke, but it's no big deal. But, like, yeah, they make so much money. And I think that, like, people don't realize that, like, the reason Nintendo got into video games, like, this was just a thing they were doing on the side was arcade mm-hmm. games. They were all about the toys
yeah.
and the cards, the Hanafuda cards. Now, all of a sudden, they're like, oh, never mind.
Yeah.
We like video games. Like, Miyamoto, what else do you want to make? And he's like, I'd like to make Donkey Kong Jr. Smash cut to the next episode. No, we'll get there. We're not done yet. We talked about the King Kong influence.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick, I just want to go over that Universal Studios did sue them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they sued Nintendo and lost.
Wow.
Yeah, believe it or not, as long as you don't call the character King Kong and you don't actually be on top of the Empire State Building, it's not that big of a deal.
I mean, I can see that because of all of the like the Asylum movies that are basically like Transformers had Transmorphers.
Right.
So I think it's a similar situation
yeah.
there.
But what I thought was fun about that case, because, I mean, like, we don't just talk about every lawsuit Nintendo goes through, is that the lawyer on the case was John Kirby. Okay.
Oh,
and
yeah. I've heard
when
the story.
They won, they thanked him with a sailboat, which they named Donkey Kong. And weirdly enough, on the Wikipedia page, it also mentions that they gave him the exclusive rights to having Donkey Kong as a sailboat name. Like, I didn't even know that you could have that power. So, like, I can't go out and name my sailboat Donkey Kong.
Well, that's something we're going to have to experiment
right,
with.
Right. I feel like, you know, sometimes Wikipedia is really on it. And other times some people are just like, John Kirby wrote that in himself. Like, and I now have the exclusive rights to Donkey Kong as a sailboat. But also, what would have been cooler, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, Donkey Kong should have been installed on the sailboat.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been cool, like, being able to play. But obviously, what I'm really alluding to here is that John Kirby
is the namesake.
Is the namesake of Kirby, which will come much later in the NES's lifespan, but something worth talking about now because it just goes to show you, you know, if your landlord looks like your character, you might get, you know, you might name him after him. And if your lawyer helps you win a big lawsuit against Universal Studios, you might name him a character. So
that's great.
Really, if you want to be in a Nintendo game, ask yourself, what have you done for them lately? You know, like, you should really do something for them if you want to be in their games.
Oh, my God. Well, I have some stray thoughts.
I'd love to hear them.
So I would like to say that as much as I enjoyed playing Donkey Kong, I would say that it is the most annoying footstep sound in video game history.
It's got really squeaky shoes.
It's like, whoop, 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 whoop. Like, I can't understand why they thought that at full volume was a good idea.
I actually do know a little something about this.
Really?
Miyamoto did an interview, I think it was for the NES Classic.
Okay.
And he did this. I'll try and link it in the show notes. There's no guarantees here. I could be making this whole thing up. But he said that originally they wanted to have like Pauline constantly shouting like help. Oh, God. And they were trying to do all this stuff, but like it wasn't sounding good. It was sounding like kelp. The seaweed, like kelp, kelp, and like they weren't like, so the people of Nintendo of America were just like, don't do this. So instead they added the shoes and the, you know, the music and stuff like that, and Nintendo of America agreed that it worked better because it was so noisy and loud that in a bar or something you could hear it over everybody talking and stuff like that, and so you'd be like, what's making all that sound, you know, like, whereas Pong,
what is that annoying noise,
what's with all the ruckus in the back? you know, with Pong, all you're hearing is bloop, bloop.
Yeah.
Bloop, you know, and in Pac-Man, you're hearing like, wah, 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 you know, so at least in Donkey Kong, you have a bunch of different sounds.
It's true. It's
so
true.
Maybe I answered your question without realizing that I was even going to be able to.
Wow. You know what, Mike? you're a maestro.
No, I read that article to prepare for this, actually, and I didn't think that was ever going to become useful. Skipped that part. I didn't even put it in the show notes. I'll add a stray thought, and then you can do another one if you'd like.
Okay.
There are so many ports of this game.
Yeah.
This thing got on Atari 2600. It was on ColecoVision and television.
All the varying levels of faithfulness to the original and just quality in general.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The quality is really strange because I will argue that the NES version is the only one that does a serviceable job.
Yeah.
Especially because that was kind of its idea. Like the Famicom was like,
they wanted to design something that would be able to play a good game of Donkey Kong.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I can't remember who that quote is attributed to. I think it was the president at the time. But that's beyond the point. I just think that it's funny that like all of these other versions come out, and some of them come out just because Nintendo just wants the cash. Like they just want to cash in on the name, and people are willing to port it. And I don't even know how involved Nintendo was in those porting processes of the Atari 2600. I'm sure Miyamoto didn't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he didn't be like, yeah, this is all right. Like, you know, like they probably didn't even ask him.
Yeah.
He didn't care. But that leads me to one particular clone that is worth talking about.
A clone.
Because it's
not Donkey Kong.
It's not Donkey Kong. It's Crazy Kong.
Oh.
And it was only it wasn't released in the States, but it is the Donkey Kong game. And it's pretty much all the same stuff, except for the music is way more terrible. They added like some extra things here and there, but Nintendo like officially said, like, go ahead and make this. Like,
really?
Like they couldn't, they were going to collect the profit on it. They were just paying the other company to make it, but they couldn't make Donkey Kong arcade cabinets fast enough around the world, and there was such a demand for it that they didn't want to miss it.
Crazy Kong?
So they just released this Crazy Kong, and it happens.
Okay, well, Mike just showed me a bit of Crazy Kong, and it is pretty ridiculous how much it is just a slightly tweaked version. It's like a it's a palette swapped version.
Yeah, for some reason they decided
Kong.
Like it needed to be green instead of red ladders. And
instead of the squeaky shoes, he's got like vaguely wet sounding shoes and the barrels bang around and like, why?
Yeah, I don't know like what Falcon was like at that. Falcon's the developer of this version. I don't know why Nintendo trusted them to make it or whatever, if they were the only option, but this is just bad. Like,
yeah.
It probably, I have to take a guess just from looking at it, probably doesn't control the same. The jump probably doesn't like
feel
as intuitive and stuff like that. So it's just another like weird step for Nintendo in this early stage where they're like, I don't really know how to commercialize my stuff and make money. So go ahead. Like we used to just make Zapper toys. Like, and you had a stray thought.
I don't remember what I was going to say.
Great, because I have another one about how Nintendo has no idea how to commercialize their stuff, okay? So, on this journey through Donkey Kong, we have to talk about Saturday Supercade, which was...
Do we really have to?
We have to talk about this very fast, because I think this is incredibly interesting. Saturday Supercade was a TV show in the 80s that like was about Pac-Man and Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr., so, yes, there was a Nintendo animated shows before the Super Mario Brothers Super Show and Super Mario Brothers 3 and The Legend of Zelda. All that stuff came after these other two shows, which are really strange because I don't know how much of it you were able to watch, Sean, but it's...
I skipped around a bit.
In the Donkey Kong show, Mario and Pauline are now chasing Donkey Kong, trying to capture him because, of course, that's Mario's pet.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right? Of course. But you didn't know that? Donkey Kong is Mario's pet who's now, like, escaped on the loose.
How does an Italian handyman have the not only just the know-how or the money or any, how does he have a pet gorilla?
Well, clearly he went to Skull Island.
Oh.
And, you know, on a boat.
You know, I'm pretty sure it's illegal to have a pet gorilla in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I think it is. But the crazy part is that Mario has, like, the most generic, like, American accent in this show. Like, he's not Italian at all. He just talks. He's very annoying. And so
I feel
is Pauline.
Like, we have to find Donkey Kong.
Yeah, like, and Donkey Kong is just, like, you know, like a Looney Tunes like character, like just doing this crazy stuff. And then the Donkey Kong Jr. show, which I don't want to talk about in the Donkey Kong Jr. episode. I'd like to just get it out of the way here. The Donkey Kong Jr. show is a direct follow up to the Donkey Kong show where Donkey Kong Jr. teams up with a greaser.
Yeah.
You know, like just like a Fonzie like character. Okay. And he's got this annoying, like, scrappy do voice to him. And he's looking for his father, Donkey Kong, who is being chased by Mario and Pauline. So it's like, in a way,
it's a rat race sort of
thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
On.
It's like there's a timeline to the Saturday Supercade.
But where does it follow in like up to golf?
I have to imagine that Donkey Kong is the very first story in the Nintendo universe.
That was beside the point. But like, okay, so here's what I think happened. I think that Nintendo was either approached a company that makes cartoons, and they're like, here are these characters. Here's a couple basic things about them and relationships. You can do what you will with the rest of it. And just said, like, just wrote a check and was like, here you go.
Right.
Like,
they had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah.
I have to imagine they were making money somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that they let some people that hadn't even played the game just decide what all of this was about.
Yeah. It's pretty scary. And I mean, like, they did all sorts of weird stuff, too. There was Donkey Kong plushes that don't look anything like Donkey Kong. I only have ads. I don't have commercials for those, but it's worth checking out. And that's just like, this is just the beginning of Nintendo's weird relationship with cartoons, because I'm just going to spoil it right now. I like the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, but even that one's not great. Like, there were really no good Nintendo cartoons. And so hopefully this new movie that Mario's getting with Illumination.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a thing that's happening. A full-length, feature-length Mario movie made by the guys who make Minions.
Okay.
Hopefully that's good.
Yeah, I would hope.
Hopefully
so.
There's no Minions in that movie. But yeah, I hope that that's something. I think we have, you know, talk the talk a little bit, and I think it's time to move into the essential games list. All right, it's time for the essential games list, and if you're new and you're just tuning in for the 1986 series, because you're like that 85, you're like, I don't want to hear what they have to say about launch games. I only care about the real games, the second year, the stuff where all the good stuff is. Right? Wrong. Go back. Listen to the 1985 one. I explain what the essential games list is. You're making me do double work here by saying it again. But I'll tell you, okay? You got Final Fantasy 15 on Steam. You've heard terrible things about that game. And you're like, it's incomplete. There's some random multiplayer stuff. I don't know why I'm getting this game now when it's still not going to be done for another year. And then I'll play it, I guess. So should I bother with that? And if you're like, well, maybe there's some old NES games. Never really looked at Donkey Kong. Saw it in the arcade. Saw it at my local bar. But it's also available on the NES. Is that essential, Sean?
Oh, see, I don't know if it's essential. I'm very, because it's a good game, and it's definitely a good time. It's not Ice Climber. But I think it's an essential. No, you know what? I've come to a decision.
Oh, okay.
It's an essential arcade game.
Ooh, I love it.
It is not an essential NES game. It's definitely the best way to play it at home. But I wouldn't put this on the list of best NES games.
That we really understood your thought process there. I love it. You took us through the whole thing, and I'd like to read what Joe has to say before I say my vote, just because I think it would be great to have another person vote. Two is a little lopsided. So Joe has this to say about Donkey Kong. This is a very short game. The controls work fine, but they don't really feel great. While Donkey Kong was probably pretty mind-blowing in its day, overall, it just doesn't have enough to offer by today's standards. I vote no.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe, for that wonderful insight. I can't help but agree with Joe here on the fact that it just really can't hold a candle to today's games, and definitely can't hold anything to, like, what we've seen from 1985. Like, it's just three levels. I mean, if they would have given me all four, I might have, like, considered that, well, like, Donkey Kong is important. Don't get me wrong. Donkey Kong is still important.
It is important.
I think Donkey Kong is worth playing.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's essential because it's not even the complete version of this game. It's
three quarters of a pie.
I will agree with Sean that I still had fun.
Good.
You know, like, going back and playing it today, I still had fun. And I think out of the like the arcade games that we've played, even though it was like the fastest and the one that you're most likely to beat, even though, like, you know, technically beating it is playing like all 22 levels, I think, before you get to the kill screen. I think that, you know, it's,
do we have
still
a kill screen over there?
We have a kill screen coming up in aisle 13. It's not even the quote, but I love, like, attributing it like as if it's a grocery store. Like, for those of you that don't know what we're talking about the King of Kong there.
It's a great documentary.
Great documentary. Apparently
about a cheater.
Yeah, apparently not that true. Like, apparently, like, since its release, we've been deceived a couple times, and that guy Billy Mitchell has actually now been found of, like,
emulating the game.
Yeah. Like, he was playing on MAME. So whatever. And apparently that whole section with where they were looking at Steve Wiebe's boards, and they broke into his garage and looked at the boards,
that was all fake.
Apparently they just staged that, and like, he actually, like, invited them in and said, like, yeah, take a look at the boards, like, there's nothing going on here, nothing fishy. But then the movie was like, that's not a movie.
It was an entertaining movie.
So the movie's not essential, and neither is the game. That's how I feel about Donkey Kong. Sean, you bring up a great point, though. That is all the time we have for this episode of Nostalgia. Join us next time for Donkey Kong Jr., which really doesn't sound great. It's you know, Donkey Kong Jr., it's like, that should have came first, like, you know, just should be Donkey.
Absolutely not. Like, do you know how Junior works?
I just mean, like, it sounds like it's a mediocre version of this game.
Of course,
like, you know, this one only included three levels. Donkey Kong Jr. is just the first level. No, but seriously, we're going to be talking about Donkey Kong Jr. next time. In fact, this whole month is pretty much the month of Donkey Kong, because we have Donkey Kong 3 and Donkey Kong Jr. Math coming up as well. So that's what we'll be talking about there. But if you want more Nostalgia, in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening right now. I mean, you are listening somewhere. If it's on the website, it's not ideal, because you have to keep checking back every Friday for the new thing. But if you're listening on, like, iTunes or Overcast or Google Play, you know, just maybe give us a little subscribe. You know, it doesn't cost anything, and we're not really doing anything to, you know, I'm not Facebook. I'm not tracking you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, actually, yeah, if you haven't noticed, they're in trouble. Nostalgia is not. We are better than Facebook.
We have never and never will meet with Cambridge Analytica.
And also on the website, there's, like, some fun stuff, too. There's articles that we do every now and again with, like, you know, the best ROM hacks and
haunted games.
Yeah, is NES baseball haunted? I bet you're wondering. Check out the articles section for that. We also do, like, in-depth reviews there, and lately I've actually been putting the show notes in the articles as well, with just, like, direct links to check out other websites that are probably have ads on them, which our website does not.
Great.
Isn't that interesting? I'm sending people to websites that have ads, but here we are. No ads.
Altruistic.
Why do we do it, Sean? Why don't we have ads?
Because we are altruistic.
And we love the listener. George.
George.
George, we love you.
specifically you and no one else.
Yeah, you can tell this is a lot less formal than how I usually do goodbyes, but that's because somebody emailed me and told me I was being ingenuine. Oh, so now here I am as my new goodbye guy.
That sounded so angry, Mike.
So if you'd like this new goodbye, George, why don't you email us at contact@nostalgiacast.com. I'm Michael Esposito. You can follow me on @EspositoFilm on Twitter, and we'll talk to you soon.